This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to Your Turn with Mike Causey, brought to you by WEPA on Federal News Network. WEPA is the life insurance choice of over 46,000 federal workers and their families. Learn more at weepa.org. Here's your host, Mike Causey.
Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Glad to have you with us today. Going to be a very interesting subject, and that is investing. As you heard from the promo, more than 75,000 federal workers are now people with thrift savings plan accounts of $1 million or more, and the vast majority of them did it the hard way. They invested over, I think, an average of 29-year period. They put most of their money in the CS or I funds, the stock index funds, and they rode out the bad times as well as the good times, and that's easier said than done. And my guest today, Arthur Stein, is a well-known financial planner in the Washington area. He teaches a course at Montgomery College in Montgomery County, Maryland, on the TSP. Most of his clients, I would assume, are federal, current or former federal workers. And I know I've talked to, I think, two or three of them independently of Arthur who have become self-made millionaires. So it can be done. And today's column is the headline is TSP Investors Overlooking a Sure Winner? And the issue is, where are people invested? So, Art, would you like to sort of take it from there, and then we'll get to some questions that people sent us.
Okay, absolutely, Mike. Yeah, you know, when investing in the TSP, of course, people have to decide how much they're going to invest, what percentage of their salary. But then the next question is, well, which funds am I going to invest in? And it's something, Mike, that you know, you and I have spoken about a lot during the show, and it's something that, you know, frankly, a lot of TSP investors get wrong. One, way too much allocated to the G fund, which loses purchasing power. And even the people who are investing in the stock funds tend to have not enough money in the S fund. Now, the stock funds that invest in U.S. stocks, it's the C fund and the S fund. And the C fund is an S&P 500 index fund, and so it invests in 500 of the largest companies in the United States. And the S fund is small and medium-sized companies. It's investing in the stocks of small and medium-sized companies. It invests in, I just found out yesterday, 3,301 stocks that are not in the S&P 500. So it's called the U.S. Completion Index because between the C fund and the S fund, you know, you're invested in the top 3,801 stocks in the United States. And historically, and past performance is no guarantee of future performance, but historically, the S fund has outperformed the C fund. And recently, that outperformance has really become noticeable. So that last year, for all of 2020, the S fund had a 70% higher rate of return than the C fund, which is a huge difference. It was up 32%. The C fund was up 18%. And this year, through yesterday, the difference is even larger. The S fund return has been 13% and the C fund 4.3%. So the S fund has had a return that's three times as large. But as I mentioned, many people don't invest in the S fund at all. And even the ones that do really tend to have a much lower allocation, so that the allocation for all TSP participants is three times as high for the C fund as the S fund, even though the S funds had a higher rate of return. We've seen that same relationship, Mike, with the bond funds, the G fund and the F fund. F fund outperforms most years, and certainly outperformed over the last 1, 3, 5, 10, and 15 years. But TSP investors have 8 times as much money in the G fund as the F fund. So they're concentrating their investments in funds that have a lower rate of return. Now, in both cases, in both these examples, the higher performing funds are more volatile. And so the S fund is more volatile than the C fund. I mean, it's not a huge difference, but there is a difference. And of course, the G fund, the short-term government bond fund, doesn't have any volatility. The F fund has, you know, volatility, but not like the stock funds. So there is that volatility difference.
Well, the I think it's very hard for the average person, and I certainly include myself in this, to understand it. But with something like the C fund, this is the S&P 500, the Standard & Poor 500. So these are the 500 largest companies, public companies, on the what, New York Stock Exchange?
I think on any exchange.
So it's the 500 largest, period. Okay. And then the S fund would be the 3,300 that remain.
Yeah. And let me just say this. The C fund, the S&P 500 index, is not the 500 largest.
Okay.
It's 500 of the largest. So, you know, for a long time, up until really a couple of months ago, Tesla was not in the S&P 500 index. And it was clearly one of the 500 largest companies. It's actually in the top 10 at this point. And now, of course, now it is part of the S&P 500.
Yeah, okay. So it's not a matter of, and they don't, you don't automatically go into it based on size.
No, you do not automatically go into it, and sometimes they kick funds out, kick stocks out of the index. There is a certain amount of judgment in it.
Well, when you're, and I'm sure your clients are accustomed to this now, or they wouldn't be your clients, but there's so many things with investing that are emotional, understandably so. If you're investing for your nest egg, if you're somebody in the private sector who maybe does not have any kind of a pension plan, then the 401k is about it for you. And, you know, things are going good, and then along comes 2007, 2008, 2009, and you immediately go into what you think is a safe harbor. And then the problem, I think you said before, is it's bad enough to switch out, but the real problem is when to go back in.
Yeah, and it's always, you know, in my experience, people don't go back in. Once they get out, they tend to stay out. And that's horrible because, you know, there are different kinds of investment risks. And usually when we ask people what they worry about, usually they say, well, I'm scared from the volatility of the stock funds. I get scared when the stock market plummets, which it did, you know, in March of this year. And as you said, 2007, 8, 9. Yeah, those are investment risks. But there are other investment risks which are not as visible. And the key one for long-term investor is the loss of purchasing power from as a result of taxes and inflation. So the G fund, you know, never goes down in value, but the purchasing power, when you take into account taxes and inflation, the purchasing power is going down every year. So I don't consider that a safe investment. It has no volatility. That investment risk is taken care of, but the risk of loss of purchasing power, you know, is horrible.
Right, and many, many people, as we see every day in the obituary section wherever you live, many people live at least as long, if not longer, than they actually worked. So you're talking about a nest egg that's going to have hopefully last you 20, 30, even more years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is what's, you know, one huge difference in our lives now is that we all have the opportunity to live into our 90s, 100, somewhere in our 100, because modern medicine just gets better and better at keeping us alive. And so we have all these replacement parts, shoulders, knees, hips, hearts. You know, I mean, what could be a more basic organ than that? Great drugs, all these other things, nutrition, exercise that, you know, people weren't availing themselves, or they weren't available years ago. And so I know you do, and I certainly know people who are 100 or more who, you know, are not only still living their lives, still enjoying their lives to, you know, some degree. In many cases, a friend of mine's mother is 104, and she still lives in her apartment in New York. And, you know, so you have to plan on investing so that you are able to take money out and supplement your annuity for 30 or 40 years after you retire.
Right. This is not your grandfather or even your grand or your mother's retirement plan. Eric White, our producer, wants us to take a break here, so we're going to do that on federalnewsnetwork.com, 1500 AM, and we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Glad to have you with us. And my guest is Arthur Stein. He's a well-known financial planner in the Washington area. Most of his customers, clients, are either active or retired federal workers, and had some very good investments in that among that group. I've talked to several of the people independently of Art. Art, how can people get in touch with you? If they want to talk to you about, you know, possibly giving them some advice.
Okay. Yeah, the my email is art, A-R-T, at arthurstinefinancial.com. So that's A-R-T-H-U-R, S-T-E-I-N, financial.com. And my website is arthurstinefinancial.com. And if you go to my website on the blog page, I'm doing Zoom webinars on Thursday, the 18th of February at 6:30, and Saturday, the 20th at 10 a.m. And these are our webinars on investing in the TSP. How do you choose which fund or funds to invest in, you know, which is the critical issue. And I think people would get a lot out of those. Of course, there's no charge, and you can sign in this modern world from anywhere in the world.
I'm gonna watch those. So thank you for that. Got a question from Rick here. And Rick says, Arthur, I agree with you concerning the S fund from watching it over the past 2 years. My plan in March of 2020 was to switch my entire balance, which totally resides in the C fund, to switch to the S fund if the two share prices fell equal to each other. When I saw the S drop in March, I paused and thought, I'll wait and see how low it will go. I figured the pandemic would be long and that surely there would be a lower bottom. I was wrong. The S fund turned around and never looked back. I expected it to go back to outperforming the C fund by $10 a share. I didn't realize it would go beyond that. Sadly, I did not move my money. I would have over $250,000 in my account if I'd followed my plan. Finally, my question, hasn't the boat sailed? Is it too late? Rick in New Jersey, and this goes to the point you said earlier about when people get out of the market for whatever reason, the second problem is they don't go back in.
Yeah, because it always looks scary. So there are a couple of things we can say about Rick. One, I, you know, admire someone who admits they made a mistake, and I'm sorry to hear that for Rick, it cost him $250,000 in potential gains, which is quite a bit.
Yeah.
Is it too late? No, if you're a long-term investor. Now, again, I would say there's, you know, no guarantee that in the future the S fund will continue to outperform. But historically, you know, that's been the case over long periods of time. And it's considered sort of a basic difference that's expected to persist, but not in the short term. You know, there's certainly going to be periods where the C fund's going to outperform the S fund. So I think, I don't know anything about Rick, but if he's still working, he could concentrate his biweekly investments into the S fund. And that way he wouldn't have to worry about whether, you know, it might go down again in the future by more than the C, because he'll be buying.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Good. Yeah. And this is an interesting case too. We had the longest bull market in record in the history of the stock market, and then in March it crashed, and everybody said, "Well, long overdue. You know, we're in for it." And it recovered quickly. It was I believe. Didn't you say that it was the shortest bear market in history, at least so far?
Yeah, it was the fastest change from a bull market, you know, which is mm-hmm. a long-term increase in stock prices. And in this case, the bull market that ended in March had lasted over 11 years. It was, and then it just very quickly became a bear market, at the fastest pace in history. And then that just was a very brief moment. It just very quickly went back into a new bull market. And so anybody who pulled their money out anticipating that the decline was going to continue, which, you know, I mean, I can certainly understand why someone would feel that way, because it was only a 34% decline during an unprecedented event in U.S. history, which is basically the economy was shut down.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen. And the market has just continued to then turned around, went up. It's probably up, well, certainly more than 70% from the bottom. We might be approaching 80% for the C fund. And so anybody who didn't get back in, they missed out on a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Which is,
and of course, people who were working, who were continuing to buy shares in the C and the S and the I fund while it was going down, you know, they did even better.
Yeah, yeah. It's the tail of the tape. Here's a question, and he says, "Does your guest agree that the P and E ratio does not make any sense? Should one be more defensive?" And would you explain P and E ratio is?
Okay, it's the P E ratio, which is called the price earnings ratio, and it is the most common way for people to compare value in the stock market. And what we mean by that is this, that, you know, we're investing in stocks. And when you buy the C and the S and I fund, you are investing in stocks by buying those funds,
mm-hmm.
because we want to share in the profits of the company. And profitable companies, you know, expect the value of their share price to go up. And many of them pay dividends, which is, you know, distributing profits during the year, usually quarterly. But at some point, you know, when the market starts going up and it gets to be really, really high, you know, we see that the value is not what it used to be. And historically, when PE ratios are very high, we have, you know, the possibility for a major decline, and are for just lower expected future returns. And currently, you know, PE ratios for stocks in general, so like the S&P 500, for instance, the S&P 500 index, which is what the C fund is, are high compared to their historical averages. It's looking now at the PE ratio for the S&P 500 is over 21%. So that's high. I mean, you know, the historical average is going to be well below that. I think it's about 15 or 16. And that would indicate that, you know, there could easily be another decline in our future, which is good to know, but there's always a decline in our future.
Yes.
I mean, stock market declines, major stock market declines, they're just part of the market. They're expected. They're always going to happen. It just depends upon when and how much. And unfortunately, we don't know when and how much the future decline. We don't know when it's going to happen and how big it'll be. And so for long-term investors, you know, like if the letter writer is still working, you know, you just need to invest and know that you're going to have some declines. And if you're retired, well, then you have a more complicated situation. But most retirees, like if you retire at 65 and you're going to immediately need money from your investments to live on, well, then you have a certain amount of money that you're going to need to take out of your investments in the next 5 years, certain amount in the next 6 to 10 years, and then a much larger amount in the next 10, 20, and 30 years. And if you're investing for those withdrawals you're going to need in the next 10, 20, and 30 years, you know, based upon the historical averages, stocks have just been a better investment. Now, they haven't been as pleasant because they are volatile and they do crash every once in a while, but they were high enough historically to increase purchasing power while the F fund and the C fund saw a decrease in purchasing power, once again, when we factor in taxes and inflation.
Well, you know, I like it when you talk about a downturn or a possible crash in the market, and there's always one in the future. It's the way, if the past is prologue, that's the way it has always been. That's the way it's always
been. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, a bear market is a decline in stock prices of 20% or more. And more could be a lot more, like 55 or 60% decline in stock prices from a previous high. And we've averaged bear markets about once every 3.5 years. So that's a pretty common occurrence. Now, we didn't have one for 11.5 years after the Great Recession in 2007, 8, 9.
Mm-hmm.
But on average, it happens like every, you know, 3.5 years.
Yeah, you know, my favorite example.
So you just.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to say, my favorite example is and it was a decade ago, if not more, but there was a volcano that erupted in Iceland, of all places. And who knew? And it disrupted air traffic, first in the North Atlantic and then kind of around the world, at least in the Northern Hemisphere. But it caused a mini recession, and you know who knew, but that happens.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Or how about a virus?
There you go.
Nobody planned for a virus.
Well, right.
And even more interesting, Mike, is not only did people not plan for a virus, but had they known a virus was coming and what was going to happen,
mm-hmm.
they probably would have been worse off as investors.
That's an excellent point.
Because, you know, if you knew in January what was going to happen, you would have just pulled out of the market and mm-hmm. not gotten back in. That would be wrong. I mean, yes, you know, we were looking at the C fund up 18% last year and the S fund up 30%.
Yeah.
It was a good year for the market, a bad year for Americans.
Right. Oh, excellent point. Okay, I need to take a short break here on federalnewsnetwork.com, 1500 AM. Be right back. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with Arthur Stein. He's a financial planner in the Washington area. And, Art, one more time, would you tell people how to get in touch with you?
Yeah, my website is arthursteinfinancial.com, A-R-T-H-U-R-S-T-E-I-N, financial.com. And if you, and my email address is art@arthursteinfinancial.com, of course. And on my website, you can sign up to be on my email list. It won't be a lot of emails, but when I post a new blog or have been on the Mike Causey show, things like that. I email out a link to people on my email list. And also you can sign up for my upcoming webinars on investing in the TSP on February 18th and 20th.
Okay. All right. Major events. Got a great one here from Late Bloomer. And she says, good morning. I'm a late bloomer when it comes to TSP investing. I was one that when things got rocky, I would move my funds to the G fund. I learned to stand fast and be patient. I have been more educated in the TSP process in 2020. I retire in May after 24 years, and I've been putting 40% of my pay in the thrift savings plan. January 1, I decided to put 60 until I retire. I've been riding the S fund like a workhorse. My question is, will I be able to gain on my balance after I retire, or will it stop? Will I be able to make moves to different funds once I'm retired?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. When people retire, they can continue to manage their TSP account by moving money among the different funds. And there's no problem doing that, no restrictions. Now, they cannot add new money into the TSP because, you know, they're not working right for the federal government anymore. But they can continue to manage what they have.
Yeah, so that, and it's interesting, too, that about half the people, when they retire from the federal government or leave it for another job, take their TSP money with them, not to spend, but to they roll it over into an IRA or some other vehicle. And it's interesting to talk to them because many of the things they cite are the fact that the money is easier to get at and easier to move around outside of the TSP, to which many people would say that's not necessarily a good thing, particularly if you're a bit jumpy. And the other thing, the TSP's administrative fees are so low. They for a long time were the lowest in the business. And I guess now there's some ETFs that are less expensive, but they're among the lowest. And over time, that can make a tremendous difference in the size of your account, can't it?
Absolutely. But as you point out, there are now lots of ETFs mm-hmm. that invest in the same indexes that have fees that are very close to about the same as, or in a few cases, even lower than the TSP funds. So that advantage has gone away. It's not much harder to get money out of the TSP. 2 years ago, I guess it was, they loosened up a lot of the restrictions they have. But there are still advantages to IRAs in these areas. One, if you want to take a lump sum, it's much easier with an IRA than the TSP. Because every time you do a lump sum withdrawal from the TSP, you have to fill out a form online, print it out, get it notarized, and then mail it in. And with a IRA, you usually can just call or even
send me a check.
Submit it online. Second difference is that with the TSP, when you withdraw money, it's going to come out of all the funds you're currently invested in. The withdrawal from each fund is going to match the percentage value of that fund in your total TSP investments. So if you had half your money in the G fund and half your money in the C fund, the stock fund, when you took money out, half would come from G and half would come from C. And that's not the way you want to do it. What you want to do is look at, well, how high are the stock market and how high is the bond market? What do I think is going to happen? You know, now when my clients, my investment clients withdraw money, we're mainly taking it from the stock funds because the stock market's really high and we lock in profits by doing that. Someone was taking money out in March, you know, then I would take it from the bond funds mm-hmm. because stocks were really low. And the third difference is this, that with an IRA, if you're 70 or older, you can make a charitable contribution directly from your IRA to the charity and it's not counted as a taxable withdrawal. So it's a tax-free withdrawal. And when you're taking required minimum distributions, which you have to start when you're 72, you can send the money to a charity and it will, again, not be a taxable withdrawal, and it will count as part of your required minimum distribution. And you cannot do that with the TSP either.
Okay. I got another really good one here. One I was anxious to hear your answer to this. It's from Leo in Philadelphia, and he says, truly enjoy reading your articles. Thanks for sharing your knowledge and expertise via these invaluable articles. I've been investing in the TSP since I left active duty service in 2008 and feel privileged to have these matching contributions. So he went from military to federal civil service. However, I need some advice. I'm 46 years old, have 40% in the L2045 fund and 60% in the G fund. I enjoy not losing any money in the G fund, but I'm losing dividends because of the G fund is flat. I'm planning to retire at 68 if health allows me to do so. Any guidance or advice would be appreciated. So he's got 40% in the 2045 life cycle fund and 60 in the G fund. What's wrong with this picture?
As I said, the G fund, it's so conservative that you have to expect to lose purchasing power over time. And the second thing is that he said he was in the L2040 fund.
Correct.
Okay. That's currently 21% in the G fund. So he has a lot of money in the G fund, and it's losing purchasing power. He's retiring, I guess he's, you know, in his 60s, going to retire at 68. You know, he's looking at a possibility for a 30-year retirement. And when 2040 rolls around, you know, the L fund is going to be about 72%, I think it is, in the G fund. It's just a very conservative investment for someone who, if you need your purchasing power of your retirement investments to increase.
Well, it sounds like he's becoming aware of it, just with that, the nature of that question.
Well, probably because he's listening to the Mike Causey
Absolutely.
Show, reading those columns.
We guarantee it. Well, listen, what are we missing here? What should we be talking about?
Well, I actually learned something new yesterday, mm-hmm. which is always good, which is, and I actually learned two things. One, you know, the funds in the TSP are managed by an outside company. And up until now, that company was BlackRock, which is a huge, money manager.
Right.
Maybe the largest. Now, the TSP became concerned that, you know, there's a risk to having all your money invested with one company. And I don't know if that's true or not, but they decided that. And so, starting in October of last year, they started having another money manager, State Street Global, manage 10 to 20% of the five the CSF&I funds. And so they are, this State Street Global now manages 10% of the C fund and 20% of the S fund. And in the future, it's going to start managing 20% of the F fund and the I fund. For TSP investors, I don't think you need to worry about this. They're both great companies. Just the TSP is spreading their bets. The second thing I learned was this, and this I guess I already knew, but I confirmed it with the TSP. Let me put it this way. I don't know if your listeners have been reading about this big run-up in GameStop stock, which was just a really unusual event. And it has to do with short selling, which means that, you know, the way most of us expect to, maybe all of us listening, expect to make money in stocks is by buying them and letting them go up in value. And people who invest in individual stocks usually do the same way. But there's another way to make money with stocks, and that is to sell short. And what sell short is you borrow shares of a stock in a company that you think is going to go down in value, and you sell those borrowed shares. And they're really, they call them borrowed shares, but really you're paying a price to borrow them. So it's really rented or leased shares.
Mm-hmm.
You sell them. And if you guessed right or your calculations were correct, some point in the future, the price of that stock goes down and you buy it back. And, you know, you still owe shares to the person you buy them from, and you use the shares you buy back at a lower price to send back to the person that loaned you the shares. And lots of mutual fund companies do this with the shares they own. They don't sell short, but they loan shares to people who want to sell short. And the TSP does this. When I say the TSP does this, BlackRock does it. Because remember, they're managing the TSP funds. They hold that money. They hold the shares that have been purchased, and they loan those out. And it's not a bad thing. It's considered a very safe thing to do, and it generates money that can be used to reduce expenses or increase profits for TSP investors.
Okay. Well, I know I don't know anything about it, but I think I'm glad I don't know anything about it. But we need to take a short break here on federalnewsnetwork.com, 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and I'm talking with Arthur Stein. He is a well-known financial planner in the Washington area. Lots of his customers, clients are federal workers or former feds, and some of them have done very well indeed. Before the break, you were talking about game stocks and whatnot, and I can't help but notice I was watching TV with my daughter the other night, and we were noticing how many ads there were for apps and cards and things like that for gambling. You know, they're talking, particularly in Virginia, but this is a gambling app, that gambling app. And I happened to be talking to one of my grandsons who's in college now, and this was the day of, either the day of or the day before the Super Bowl, and he said that a lot of kids in his school, and he met a lot of them, are betting on everything. There's sort of a gambling fever going on. And one of the bets du jour was whether the national anthem in the Super Bowl would last less than 2 minutes or more than 2 minutes. And he said a lot of these kids are investing, and he thinks it's because of apps and programs and whatnot. What's the difference between gambling and playing the stock market?
Well, one, if you're gambling, and this is a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of money that's gambled, you know, that's bet on a football game or anything else is less than the amount of money paid out to the winners.
Okay.
So, you know,
yeah,
the house keeps a certain
yeah.
percentage. And so, you know, and two, you have no idea whether the Star Spangled Banner, I mean, maybe people do. Maybe they sit down and time it, you know,
yeah, uh-huh.
Our college kids at work. With investing, you're dealing with a pot of money that grows over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at the stock market. It's much higher today than it was, you know, a month ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. So you can buy and hold. If you're in a well-diversified portfolio, and you are with the TSP funds, you can buy and hold and know that historically you would have made money just by holding on, and that patience is a virtue when doing stock investing. And, you know, we were talking about GameStop, you know, the company and selling short. And you said you're glad you don't have to know about that. And with investing long term, you don't have to pay attention. You know,
good point.
I wouldn't say ignorance is bliss, but you can ignore the investment and just look at it once a year or whatever. But knowing that long term, stocks have increased in these, you know, well-diversified index funds. And it's just a question historically of how long you needed to wait. And even the bond funds, you know, went up in value. They just didn't go up in value enough to maintain purchasing power. So it's completely different from gambling. And, you know, sometimes people equate the two, but it's not fair. Now, there's a different type of investing, which is speculating.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say it's closer to gambling, but, you know, there you're dealing with assets in some cases where you have to buy and sell at the right time to make money, which has not been true of the stock market.
Yeah.
You could just buy and hold at any time and then just wait long enough. But if you're investing in, say, gold or other types of commodities, you have to buy and sell at the right time. And that's a completely different situation. With this GameStop app, a lot of the run-up was because people were getting on internet messaging boards, and somebody would say, let's all buy this, and then they would buy it, and they don't really know anything about the company. Probably weren't planning on holding it for a long period of time. And, you know, who takes advice from some unknown person on the internet? I mean, how good could that turn out?
You know, we got less than a minute here, but I think something you said earlier is going to haunt me, and it is so smart, is what would you have done? Take yourself back. What would you have done if you had known a year ago, you know, 12 months ago to this point, that there would be a worldwide pandemic, that we'd all be wearing masks, that we're spraying microphones here in the station, that the people are working from home, the discomfort, the death, the danger this has brought? What would you have done if you had known this was coming up? And the answer is probably made a lot of mistakes in the financial market. So listen, thank you so much, Art, for being here.
And thank you.
And thank you, Eric, for producing the show. Hope you all have a good week. Don't panic, and we'll see you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Stay safe.
You've been listening to Your Turn with Mike Causey, brought to you by WEPA on Federal News Network. WEPA is the life insurance choice of over 46,000 federal workers and their families. Learn more at weepa.org.